Hello and welcome to the Smart Beauty Podcast. I'm your host, Viola Levy, beauty journalist and founder of copy-led branding agency, Smart Beauty Creative. We're here to create your brand voice and craft the story behind it. Today, I'm thrilled to welcome Estée Lalonde to the podcast, a voice, a face and a founder many of us know and admire in the beauty world. Estée first captured attention as one of the early digital influencers in beauty with her relatable, down-to-earth personality and inspiring content that resonated deeply with her audience. Since then, she's evolved from content creator to brand founder with Mirror Water, a brand that reflects her journey of self-discovery and commitment to wellness and mindfulness. Over the years, Estée has become a pioneer in redefining beauty and self-care, shifting the focus towards authenticity, feeling good, and living with intention. Her work continues to inspire countless followers and fans around the world. Today, we'll delve into her incredible journey from navigating the beauty industry as one of its first influencers to the challenges and triumphs of launching her own brand and what it truly means to stay authentic in an ever-changing digital landscape. Estée, thank you so much for joining me today.
Wow, what an intro.
Mirror Water has become such a unique and personal expression of you, from like your values to your experiences. So looking back, how has that journey from like starting out as a content creator to now a brand founder kind of shaped who you are today, would you say?
Well, when I started creating content about 15 years ago, I had no idea what was in store for me. I truly started doing it as a hobby because I wanted to share and I wanted to connect with other people. And there was no sort of ulterior motive. You know, I never thought about all the followers and the money and that sort of thing, which I think is obviously, you know, what the industry has become. And it's exciting and amazing. But I really was doing it for myself and for, you know, anyone who might connect with it. So over time, I think when I started sharing my life, I was so young, I was 19, and I shared a lot of things and it's shaped me in every single possible way. I mean, most 19-year-olds don't share the ins and outs of their first relationship. You know, they don't share the ups and downs of their mental health. You know, I had a platform of people almost looking to me, not necessarily for guidance, but for reassurance that there was someone else out there, you know, experiencing the highs and lows of life, I guess. And because it was such a new thing, there weren't that many people doing it. So I can completely understand why that whole YouTube thing took off at that time in terms of vlogging. When I look back to it now, of how it shaped me as a 34-year-old woman, there's been so many positives and negatives, I think, of having a life lived online. Some of the positives obviously include having this amazing career, having, you know, a following of people who truly get me. You know, like sometimes when I meet people on the street or whatever, it's like running into a long lost friend, even though I've never met them, but there's just like a kinship there. And some of the negative ways it's impacted me is it's actually made my anxiety probably a lot worse because of the pressure of it all. But equally, I know that sharing my mental health is helping other people. And, you know, maybe some other negatives are, well, I talk about this a lot in therapy, is I don't sometimes know the difference between the real Estée and the Estée Lalonde that I put online. And so sometimes there's a disconnect there within myself. So there, I mean, I could talk about that a lot, but those are just some broad examples.
And do you think kind of looking back, you would have been a bit more kind of, I wouldn't say like closed off, but would you have approached things differently within, in like terms of how sort of open, authentic you were? Did you think that, you know, now sort of knowing that there's a bit of a personal cost, I mean, it's great that people were able to relate to you and that you were able to sort of put content out there that people felt less alone. But for your sake, would you say that you would perhaps have done things differently, knowing sort of what the consequences, your anxiety perhaps were?
The thing is, like, if I would have done things differently, I wouldn't be where I am today. Yeah. I think if I was starting today, I wouldn't do it the same way. But obviously, I was much younger and I didn't understand. I don't think anyone really understood what it feels like to be 15 years down the line and having everything you've ever shared still be available on the internet. You know, any person I meet can Google me and they can see what I've been up to. And especially for my personal life, like say I go on a date with someone, they Google me, they can tell that I was previously engaged. They can see that I previously did this. You know, it's like, it's like the, it's next level. It's a next level look into somebody's life that is, it's quite hard to deal with, you know, like I have to manage that with every single person I meet, you know, sometimes. So that's a lot. I don't think I would do it differently, because that was just of the time, but I'm definitely a lot more conscious of it going forward.
Yeah, particularly as a brand founder, I imagine, is like the brand ambassador. I mean, I think there's a lot of pressure on particularly female founders to be like, quote unquote, authentic. How do you kind of balance that? Because I think that, like you say, there can be a cost to being too authentic. And do we really have to be authentic to be likable? Like, is there a balance between having that sort of level of authenticity and being kind of strategic with how you manage that, manage your like personal image and like putting yourself out there?
People always say they want authenticity, but I honestly think people can't handle authenticity because it's the truth of it all is messy and there's so much judgment. And, you know, even if I talk about my brand and I say like, I am so stressed with da 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 da, people will say, wow, it must be really stressful making body scrubs for a living. You know, like you get that feedback and it's like, there's always so much context to something. And obviously everything's relative and everybody's stress is relative. And, you know, I'm in a very privileged position and I'm grateful and all those things, but I can't share my authentic story because I know that it's just up for so much scrutiny. And I think maybe if it was the early days, I would have a thicker skin, and I have a really thick skin now, but I don't have as much tolerance for it. I just can't be bothered. I can't be bothered to share a lot of the stuff because I don't want to explain. Actually, you know, running a company and launching a beauty brand is incredibly difficult. And, you know, I don't have to explain myself. So to answer your question, I do think you can have authenticity without sharing the real woes of life. I mean, the tricky thing is I've done it for so long. I want to share like more than anything. I would love to just like get on YouTube and be like, girls, here's what's actually going on. But unfortunately there's a few bad apples that spoil it and it can get kind of blown out of proportion and turned into this whole thing that I personally just don't have the mental capacity to deal with. I think a lot of what I'm doing now is trying to navigate how I move forward as a content creator on one hand and a brand founder on the other, and how I can kind of merge the two while still, you know, having that connection that brought my audience to me in the first place. So it's actually a really tricky task.
Yeah, I can imagine. And like people say, like I see these sort of TikTok videos where it's these kind of finance bros that are like, oh, you know, you should be polarizing. You need to be polarizing. People should either love you or they hate you. But I feel like for us, for women and for minorities, we don't have that luxury. Like there's still that element that there's, you have to be likable in order to be successful. And it's a very tricky balance, like you say.
You're so right. I think anytime I do something and it's like maybe off what people are used to seeing from me and it doesn't get, you know, a great response, the followers drop immediately. I don't want to be a polarizing person. That's not in my nature to be like any press is good press. That's not actually what I'm seeking. I don't want to just have like fame for being somebody that's a polarizing personality, you know, but equally like you're never going to be liked by everyone. And I think especially in the startup world, I know Grace Beverly always says this stat, which is only 2% of female founded companies get venture backed. And, you know, there's many reasons for that. And I think like, if I even have a chance at that 2%, I'm going to have to be a likable person.
No, for sure. And on that note, I think a lot of female founders, there's that pressure that you also have to be a brand ambassador and an influencer, even if you didn't sort of come up through that path. What are your thoughts on that? Because obviously, I think people underestimate that that is a kind of full-time job in itself.
People really do underestimate that. And honestly, I've obviously started as a content creator, so I have all that history and I have that amazing platform, but they're not there to listen to me talk about my brand. They're there to hear me talk about my life. And in some ways, I sort of envy people who start beauty brands without a platform first because they can then make their platform about the brand. I can't do that with my brands, with my existing Instagram. I can't just turn it into the Mirror Water, behind the scenes channel. I have to maintain two very different sides of my life and then occasionally try to like put my brand into my personal Instagram because that it is my life. And it's quite tricky. I see, amazing brand founders like oh, I can't remember her name now. The founder of Crown Affair. What's her name? Diana Cohen. She is amazing. And she shares a lot about Crown Affair. I could never do that. I would lose most of my audience, I think. So, like, there's pros and cons of everything.
For sure. And for me personally, like having just launched Smart Beauty, like I'm now having to kind of put myself out there a lot more, and that is kind of goes against every cell in my body is just like, get out. Because I think as women as well, it's a lot of us don't feel comfortable putting ourselves out there. What would be your advice to somebody in that position who maybe, unlike yourself, hasn't isn't a content creator or doesn't have isn't used to kind of sort of being the face of something?
Well, I would say I didn't come out of the womb like this. I trained myself. So if I can do it, anyone can do it because when I started, I was incredibly introverted. I would say just be comfortable with the fact that you're not going to be good immediately. And that sucks because everybody wants to be good. No one wants to be bad at something, but it does take practice. It's like any other job. You learn how to do it with more experience. It's funny because sometimes my friends like they won't like make fun of my job, but they kind of sometimes people think it's just an easy job. And when they come over, sometimes I say, okay, here's this lip balm and I'm gonna film you and I want you to tell me why you like this lip balm so much. They freeze on the camera. It's because it's a skill.
It
And
totally is. It looks so
yeah,
easy from the outside, but to get in front of a camera and be able to
the
switch it on is just
whole
so difficult. I've tried it myself and failed spectacularly.
The entire point of being an influencer is to make it look easy. That's the job. And I've said that to people so many times when people are like, all you do is get your hair done and get your nails done. And I say, well, I must be doing a really good job then because you think I don't do anything.
How could they say that to you? That is wild.
Oh man, that's just the tip of the iceberg. But yeah, I guess my advice would be just practice, accept that you're probably going to look a little bit stupid for the beginning and do it in the comfort of your own home and just get over it and just get it out there. We're not looking for perfection here. We're just looking to get it out there.
Done is better than perfect, you say.
Yes, big time.
And you're part of a growing number of brands who are influencer founded. How do you think brands like yours are kind of helping to shape the beauty industry? Because I think it's a great thing. I think to have, more female founders in general, but also sort of content creators that have a prominent voice in the
Yeah.
industry can only be a good thing.
I think it's a really exciting natural progression for, a lot of us that started earlier. I'm a huge fan of people like Jamie Genevieve. Of course, she's got Viv Beauty. And to go from someone like I was 19, I dropped out of university and I became a content creator. Now I'm running my own business. This is all things that I was I this is all self-taught, and that's empowering to me. And I'm sure Genevieve feels the same. I feel so empowered by it. I don't know the answers. I don't know the outcome of how it will go, but I'm learning so many new skills, which is great. And I think it's ex inspiring to the people that watch us too. I could have been an influencer probably for the rest of my life and just had a pretty comfortable life, but instead, I wanted to kind of challenge myself and take this on. I mean, looking back, I'm like, I miss that old life of I thought I was stressed then. Well, I'm stressed now. But I think it's wonderful. I think it's amazing, and I love showing more of the behind the scenes of starting the brand because it is, typically a man's world, and there is this barrier to entry. Like, I didn't know how to start a brand before this. I didn't know what a business plan was. Like, I genuinely had never seen a business plan before I started this whole thing. And now I've made like tons of them. I've started investing in other companies. And I think all of that is an amazing thing. And I think if you have a platform and you have influence and you can talk about those sorts of things, you're only empowering and inspiring other women.
No, for sure. And how important was kind of your brand story and sort of putting all that together? Because obviously you've got great products, but you need to have a good story to sort of go with them. So how did what was the how did all that come about?
It's harder than it seems. And I think there have been a few iterations of it. I mean, our brand just turned 3 years old. I mean, I say our brand, but it is my brand.
Yeah,
I
congratulations.
always feel weird saying that, but yeah, I guess it is mine. And you know, we've spent 3 years trying to find that perfect product market fit. You know, where do we fit in the landscape of body care, wellness? So although like the embers and the, you know, foundation of the brand story has been the same, over time it does evolve and things start to just make a little bit more sense. And obviously I'd never done this before. I didn't know what brand pillars were. I didn't know anything about that. I just wanted to start a beautiful brand because I wanted the products. So in a way I've kind of worked a bit backwards, but yeah, I would say the most important thing when you launch is to have a good business plan and a solid foundation for a brand story.
And do you think that brands like yours are part of a growing kind of shift in the industry that sort of products to make us feel good as opposed to just look good?
Absolutely. I think, you know, I am someone that doesn't wear loads of makeup. I'm tired all the time. My stress levels are through the roof. I'm always trying to find ways to make myself feel better. I like being at home. I love wellness, but I'm not
Yeah.
like a gym bunny. So, you know, I'm just trying to find ways here and there that can help me. And interestingly, I was having a conversation with Mecca, the retailer in Australia, and I don't know if this is a secret, but anyway, whatever, I'll just say it. They are merging their body care range with a category called well-being. So, you know, everything's kind of shifting to kind of merge any sort of product that's going to help you relax, reset, slow down. They're merging that with what's called well-being. And I think Sephora is going to do a sort of similar thing. It's not going anywhere. Well, wellness, you know, all of these anti-stress type things. We're getting more stressed by the day. So I think it's a really growing category, and I think we'll see a lot more well-being brands popping up.
Yeah, and it makes sense when you think about it, because I feel like even like if I kind of work out, which is a bit of a rarity these days, but when I do, it's you feel great in your body, and if you feel good, then you feel better about your body as well. I find that my body image kind of improves with how I feel just within myself. Do you find that as well?
Completely. It's so strange because, like, I could wake up feeling like shit, hating myself, and I'll be like, oh, maybe I'll go for a walk along the canal. I'll go for a walk and come back. It's like instantly, wow, I actually hate myself a little bit less. That's nice. You know,
It's so
I don't know why I
subjective,
don't do it
isn't
every day.
it?
But I do think, you know, and part of the reason I wanted to launch Mirror Water is because sometimes I think wellness can be a bit heavy on the guilt, and it can make you feel like you're not doing enough. You know, you're not going to fit into that particular size. You're not doing enough gratitude journaling. You know, all those things. I wanted to create a brand with well-being at its heart that accepted you as you are and like understand that some days you don't feel great or you don't look your best or feel your best, you know, and that's okay. And you don't always have to jump out of bed at 5 o'clock in the morning for your gratitude journal and your Pilates and your green juice before
Oh my
your
God.
9 to 5.
Yeah. I know, but that's definitely not an option for me. I mean, I got like,
Yeah.
hit in the head by a toddler at 5 a.m. this morning. So the idea of doing an hour of yoga and all of that shit is
Yeah.
like
But like, don't you find that like, for instance, we're recording this on a Friday. I haven't been to the gym this week. I had high hopes on Sunday night. I was like, I'm going to try to get to a yoga class this week. I didn't. There's like an underlying negative feeling I have about that in myself. It's like a constant undercurrent of you're not doing enough. I hate that feeling. I'm trying hard to work through that within myself.
It's like culture of
Yeah.
perfectionism. It's like you need to look after yourself, but perfectly, it's like
Yeah. Yeah, completely.
It's like we put pressure on ourselves even when we're trying to take the pressure off of ourselves, which is.
Exactly. And that's why I love baths so much, because the only thing you're supposed to do is chill. I like to have dedicated time. And I think, like, I always say rest is productive, and I try to remember that. Resting is something positive you're doing for yourself. And just like I sort of like schedule in meetings and, all the things I need to do, like a dentist appointment, I have to schedule in my downtime just so I can get rid of the guilt. Like sometimes when I do a yoga class, they say at the beginning of the class, this hour is just for you. You have nowhere else to be. Don't think about it. That really helps me. So I kind of try to take the same approach to like my downtime.
Yeah, I think it's so important to kind of proactively switch off as opposed to, just trying to snatch moments here and there. What was it like when you were growing up? What was the beauty industry like when you were growing up, and how do you feel like it's changed, going on from what we were saying about kind of products to make you feel good as opposed to look good? Do you think that that's kind of changed from when you were younger and sort of messages that were being marketed to you as a teenager?
I don't think anything was marketed towards you making you feel better about yourself when I was
No.
growing up. I mean,
It's like your shit,
I
you need to
remember,
improve.
exactly. I remember going to MAC when I was probably like 14 or 15 in high school, and all my friends and I just spending all of our money that we'd saved on like these heavy foundations and blushes and bronzers and whatever and mascara. And I, at the time, like felt if I don't have these things, I'm ugly, or like I'm not going to fit in, and like all of those things. That's so sad. I'm glad that's kind of going away. I mean, we've obviously are faced with other problems now, because now I think it's more about looking natural and looking perfect with no makeup. You know what I mean? It's like we got other problems now.
Yeah, it's kind of like you're damned if you do, damned if you don't, right?
Exactly.
And what was it like kind of working with beauty brands in your like early days as a content creator? Like, how were you treated, and was there anything sort of surprising or challenging that sort of springs to mind?
In the early days, it's just so, I think of it so fondly. I mean, I remember getting sent my very first product for free. It was the Liz Earle Hot Cloth Cleanser.
Oh, classic.
And it was truly like I had won the lottery when that package came through my door. Like, I couldn't believe it. A brand was sending me this for free. Like, it's insane. Looking back, I had one of the top three beauty blogs in the UK, and I was getting millions of views a month. And obviously, I was, helping them out by featuring it, but it wasn't positioned like that at the time, and I didn't feel that way. This was a much different era, and in a way, like I miss those days. Nobody will do anything for free anymore, and I understand this from both sides, because I'm a seasoned content creator who likes to get paid for the work I do, but equally now I have a startup brand, and we truly have no money to pay people to do those things, and I think it's sad that it's kind of rarer and rarer for someone to feature a product just because they like it. They're always looking for that paycheck, but equally I get it. And especially with the rise of UGC, I was doing UGC for 10 years for free. But obviously I love that people are empowered to get paid for that, and they should get paid for that. But it's just harder now that I'm on the brand side and I understand how difficult it is to get a brand off the ground. But when I was first starting, it was the wild, wild west out there. The best of times, the worst of times.
No, for sure. And there's chatter online. I mean, I feel like this conversation has been around for years, but there was a brand that gifted influencers, like I think it was a Cartier bracelet or something. And people are now saying, like, look, we want to move away from that. We don't want to see influencers being given these extravagant gifts. We want to see like the customers, real people who actually love and use the brand. Like, what's your kind of take on that, brand founder?
I think influencers, and I put myself in the category, obviously, our value is kind of going down, because the audience, whether it's true or not, thinks that we're just getting paid to talk about something, so we don't really care about it. It's not, it doesn't hold as much weight as it used to be in the early days when we were just talking about things that we loved. I think now, customer reviews, word of mouth, That is so important. And I don't know about you, but when I go on Instagram, everything I look at is an ad. And I'm not really buying from that. Now I more look at influencers as a form of advertising. I don't think it's necessarily converting into sales like it once was. Like I remember back in the day, if I mentioned a lipstick, it would sell out. Whereas now it's more sort of like, oh, Estée's using that lipstick. That's cool. That looks really good on her. And then that customer will probably have to see that four or five more times somewhere else. It's just working with influencers in a bit of a different way now, I think. But absolutely, I think like micro influencers, nano influencers, their weight is amazing. And they have like genuine relationships with their audience that feels a little bit closer than at an arm's length, which is maybe how it feels with some of the bigger influencers now.
I can imagine. And when you kind of were putting together your strategy as a brand founder, did you kind of decide, right, I'm going to do X, Y, and Z differently to when I was on the other end of this, when I was sort of being working with brands?
Yeah. Well, I had really grand ideas when I started the brand. I was like, I'm gonna do this so differently. And then now that I'm on the other side, I'm like, actually, it's a lot harder to do things differently than I thought it was going to be. But I have to say, I have had so much support from other content creators and people in my network for the brand. All of my friends have posted about the product. They do obviously believe in it. And actually, some of my friends have invested in the brand, which is amazing. That's like the ultimate belief. So I must say, like, I'm so grateful to anyone and everyone that's like mentioned the product, because without that, I just don't know how else we could get the word out. I mean, I can't afford to do paid media. I can't afford to do any marketing. I don't have press. It's really hard to cut through the noise. I think now that we're 3 years on, I'm sort of starting to think, right, like how can we work with influencers in a meaningful way? Of course, I can't afford those high rates. Like, I don't even take a salary from the company myself. So I don't have the money to do that. But I think like UGC is a great way to get content. And I think we'll start working with some creators for that. And also, I think just like personally reaching out to influencers and telling them the truth, like, hi, I'm Estée, this is my brand. Like, I would love to send you some. I'm sorry I don't have any budget to put behind this, but if you liked it, it would be amazing. And I think just like that transparency is what people like. And ultimately, people do love to support small female-founded businesses, like other women in the industry. So yeah, I'm really grateful, and I think that's probably the way I'm gonna approach it from this point up until hopefully we get some money and then we can
Money's
pay
always good.
everyone and everyone.
And what were the biggest kind of, challenges? I mean, I imagine it's terrifying. I mean, I've started a business, I don't even have a product, and I find it terrifying. What were the biggest kind of unexpected challenges, looking back kind of 3 years on?
I really approached this brand completely naively. I knew it would be difficult, but you know what? If I knew how difficult it was going to be, I would never have done it. Truly, I never would have done it.
What you don't know, you don't fear, right?
Exactly. So I'm glad in some ways. I think some of the most difficult things that I've had to learn is operational, logistical things. We have a warehouse in the US, we have a warehouse in the UK. Dealing with things like tax in the US and the UK, especially with everything that's going on politically, supply chain. I didn't understand things like lead times. My glass jars for my body oil, that might be on a 16-week lead time. I need to order the caps, that might be on a 27-week lead time. And then managing cash flow on top of that. I don't know about these things. I've never gone to business school.
Oh,
I didn't even
gosh.
know what cash flow meant before I launched this
But we're not
company.
bloody taught these things at school as well, which is annoying. It's a whole
It
other
is
podcast,
annoying.
but that's kind of my personal bugbear is that,
Totally. I wish I just had a general idea of how to run a business. And I thought, in a way, because I've been running my content creation business, that I had a good idea. No, I didn't know how to do this. I think also legal, there's a lot of legal loops to jump through, especially with beauty products. You have to get your products tested, you have to get them registered, you have to have certain things on the packaging, you have to have certain font sizes on the packaging. All of this costs so much money because I'm not an expert in it. I have to hire someone who knows about that. Otherwise, your product gets recalled, you're out thousands of pounds. So many things is, another hard thing is maintaining the Instagram page with what content, who's taking that content, who's photographing that content, who's writing the captions, who's writing our newsletter every week. We're a team of 2.5 people. And I'm also a full-time content creator. So it's like, it's truly, it can feel really, really overwhelming. So I feel like I'm drowning pretty much most days, but it's the only thing that gets me out of bed. I'm excited about it. I'm optimistic about it. So I think like all entrepreneurs kind of love that mix of feelings, probably.
What keeps you from like consumed by that? Like, how do you keep going?
Well, I messaged one of my founder friends literally 2 days ago because I was like, I just don't know what's going to happen here, with this certain situation. And she said, running a business is kind of like being a recovering alcoholic. You just have to take it one day at a time. And honestly, I will look at, say, if like I'm stressing about finances, I'll look at the bank account one day and I will literally not be able to sleep because I'm like, I don't know how I'm going to pay my staff. I don't know how I'm going to pay the warehouse. I don't know how to do all this stuff. And then a couple of days will go by and you know what? I'm still here. Everything's going to be okay. And it's just things change so quickly when you have your own business. It's not a marathon. It's not a sprint. It's a climb. And every day you just have to basically do something. You don't have to solve every problem every single day. And I think that's one piece of advice I would give to people. My inbox, I have at least 400 or 500 emails that I need to reply to. They're all flagged. And I'm like, I can't get to all this today. And it's just like accepting that, which is so hard.
It's really tricky because there's just so many moving parts, aren't there? And it
I'll just jump in. One thing you said about all the moving parts. I think that's another thing that is not really spoken about or understood before launching a business is how your brain needs to switch between in 1 hour even operations. Then it'll be something about marketing. Then it'll be a finance call. And then you have to talk about this. And then you have to be creative and talk about product launches. It's like your brain is in overdrive. And one thing that's helped me a lot is time blocking. And I'm not perfect at it. But I think that's sort of where that entrepreneurial fatigue has really hit me is like having to switch from subject matter to subject matter and having to like recalibrate my brain all the time. I'm trying to get better at saying, okay, stay from 9 in the morning until 10 in the morning, you're going to deal with all of your product issues. Then just focusing on that and not getting distracted by all the messages on Slack or the,
Makes
customer
sense.
issue. And it does really, really help.
And do you think you have to be a certain personality type to go into this? Go into this entrepreneur, because I feel like myself personally, I think a lot of us, like, we don't have any other choice because of things like anxiety or just being neurodiversity. And I'm still pushing to get a diagnosis for myself, but I feel like for me, like, work choosing my own hours is the only way that my brain can function. Do you feel like that some of us just don't fit into that regular 9 to 5 mold, and we have to kind of go out and do it
Absolutely.
on our own?
You're so right. There is no other option for me. I don't know how people go into work every day and sit around people all the time and have a smile on and get their work done. And I truly couldn't do it.
Same. It's that kind of game face on office chit chat was the one that used
Oh,
to, like, just
nightmare.
yeah.
Obviously, if push came to shove, I would have to do it. But yeah, I definitely wanted to take like a chance at it. And I think if you are someone that's like has this idea and has this feeling of I want to do it, this just try it. Just try it.
Yeah, and I feel like when those sort of t those moments come where you're just like, oh my God, how am I going to pay X, Y, and Z? But things have a way of just, maybe this is naive, but things have a way of working themselves out, like,
Yeah, that's what I tell myself anyway. And one other thing that if I could start over, I would do differently is I would start smaller. So I think like when I launched the brand, I sort of maybe had a little bit of ego and I was like, this is going to be like, a huge launch and whatever else. And I don't think you need to start off huge, start small. It's difficult with beauty brands because the minimum order quantities are so high. So like I had to make 5,000 units of each product. That is a lot. And if you think about like the money behind that, so like if just say my body oil, which this is a fake price, just say it costs £10, which it doesn't, but just say it did. You know, I have to order 5,000 of those and I have three products. So you guys listening can do the math. It's like, where is that money coming from? And then how do you replenish that? With it's like, I wish maybe I started with one product. I wish I found a manufacturer who could make a smaller run. I wish I just started smaller. So if anyone's listening, you know, there is no shame in starting a bit smaller and growing. And I wish I did that.
And what's it like speaking to kind of investors and retailers and people like that? Like, it is, you know, how do you kind of approach that, having kind of not got into business before and, like you say, kind of being very new to this? I imagine that was kind of quite, you know, intimidating to say the least. How did you
Yes.
deal with that?
Well, I raised some money during COVID to launch the brand because, like I just mentioned, the prices of launching the products, and also, you know, things like trademarks and websites. So I did my first investor pitch during COVID over Zoom. I didn't know what I was talking about. I rehearsed several times with other people who have done it before, but honest to God, I don't think I've ever been so nervous in my life. And he was a man, and I just felt less than. I felt like I didn't know the answers to anything. I really didn't understand the finances. You know, I still have a lot of room to learn with the finance department because my brain just doesn't work that way. But anyway, I got through it and I came out a better person. I have since done probably hundreds, if not thousands, of pitches to investors, and most of them end with a no.
That's the thing, isn't it?
Yeah, it's really, really tough. And it's hard to deal with the rejection. But then you occasionally get a yes, and they're an amazing partner. And I have some amazing angel investors in the brand, and you're like, okay, it's validating. And then with retailers, I love speaking to retailers because they get the vision most of the time. And, you know, we have so many amazing retail partners, Space NK, Liberty. We're launching with Selfridges soon,
Yeah, you
I
can't get any
think.
better than that, really.
Like, they're so amazing.
Yeah.
And when you have those buyers saying we believe in the brand and it's so gorgeous and whatever, it's like, okay, so I should just keep going. And those are all those little things that as a founder you kind of have to hold on to when you're getting rejected and yet another investor pitch.
It must be so tricky. And how did you kind of go into developing? Because I love the brand, sort of got, you know, such a unique kind of look and feel and like personality. Can you give us a little insight into the
Yeah.
process? Like, how much of yourself was in the brand, and did you kind of sort of struggle with that, not knowing where kind of you ended and the brand began, so to speak?
Yes. Well, I knew I wanted the brand to have its own name and its own identity. So it's called Mirror Water because it's all about self-reflection and going inwards and looking at your life and yourself in the mirror. Blah, blah, blah. I could go on about that. And I knew the sort of gist of what I wanted to have, this sort of like ethereal, like kind of ripples and maybe spirals and things like that. But equally, I am not a designer. So I was introduced to an amazing designer based in Australia. Her name is Manueli, and I still work with her today. So we've been working together for at least 4.5, maybe almost 5 years, because it took about 2 years to develop the brand before I launched it. And she took all of my mood boards and turned it into this amazing mirror water world, which truly is like better than anything I ever could have imagined. So I have to give all the credit to her. She really like saw what I was trying to do and
Yeah.
elevated it.
When you see
So I
it all
would
coming
say,
together, you're like, holy shit, this is actually gonna work.
yeah,
Like, you
I
know,
know.
it's.
And as soon as I saw the logo, because first of all, when I wanted to name it Mirror Water, everyone said no. Everyone was like, that
Oh,
is the
really?
most stupid name. It's way too long. It's not going to fit on any of your packaging. It's not memorable. It's a mouthful. And I
I
just
love the
loved
name.
it.
I'm not just saying that. Like, I really think
Thank
that
you.
it's.
I love it too. I think it's different. And I'm so glad I went with it because now it's like one of the most complimented things about the brand. So that's another lesson in trusting your instinct. And yeah, so I have to say my designer is amazing. And then I have a great, like a small but mighty team of people who help with like the Instagram and everything. And I have to say, like, I just let them run with it. So it's run by Holly, who's my full-time employee. She's our brand marketing manager. And yeah, she's just taken like the initial design that Manueli did and turned it into like a more social friendly look and feel. So I think I'm a big believer in, like, when you hire someone, you need to let them fly with what they do best. And although it is hard as a founder to give up control, I think she's done an amazing job.
What's it like kind of managing a team? Because I'm personally shit at managing people, and that sort of terrifies me. And I think you could be good at your job, but then kind of managing people is a whole completely different skill set. I mean, you might be very good at it, I don't know, but it's
I'm
I
not.
it's
If I didn't have to be doing content creation, like if that wasn't part of my life, I think I would be a much better manager because I would have more time to manage and prep and plan. But it'll be like a Sunday night at 9 o'clock at night, and I'm trying to think, like, okay, what should the team be working on this week? You know, there are it's managing people is hard, and to anyone out there who has done it and is good at it, like that. That's another skill that I would love to get better at. It's quite difficult. I'm not the best at it, but we use things like Slack and Notion, and that helps keep everything in place. And I think, like, ultimately the most important thing is people need to know what they're working on. They need to know what they're doing. And I'm a very involved founder. Like every single day I'm talking to the team on Slack, and I'm not just kind of like running around, you know, not plugging in. I am very, very hands-on, maybe sometimes a little too hands-on.
Well, it's I think it's to be expected when it's your brand.
Yeah.
And do you believe in like manifestation?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, I think we have to, don't we? I'm just manifesting the shit
Yeah.
out of everything at the moment. Just...
Yeah, I think we have to. Yeah, I think like I think Oprah said this, and she said a lot of people don't get to where they want to go because they don't know where they want to go. And I think that is really true. Like if I don't say I want to launch at this retailer by the end of this year and work backwards, how am I ever going to make that happen? And things don't just fall on your lap. So I don't believe in like blind manifestation, but I do believe in like setting a goal and working towards it.
I think it's like creating a psychological roadmap, isn't it? And just so we're nearly at the end of our time, but I wanted to just ask you, like, if there's anything that you could go back and tell your 19-year-old self when you were starting out, what would it be?
Save your money. My mom used to tell me that all the time, and I was
we
like,
never do. We never do.
You never do. No, but in all seriousness, if I could go back, you know what? I'm really like happy with the way I went about everything, but I think I would just go back and say, how do I put this? I think when I was 19, I was just kind of going with the flow, and like I thought, okay, I'm going to be a content creator and whatever. I kind of had a one-track mind about what it looked like to be a content creator and what my career would be, and I just kind of focused on that. I wish I felt empowered younger to start my own type of company, or to start at least learning and investing in my future, like taking more business courses, even though I didn't necessarily know how to apply those skills. I wish I would have just started learning about that stuff back then when I had more time, even though I felt like I had no time, you know, learning things like how to use Excel. Wish I knew.
Cool. It's so true. I think entrepreneurship is the only way that we will ever achieve like true equality and empowerment. I think trying to kind of change the way traditional companies operate is just, you know, the wrong way to go about it. I think we should, just do it for ourselves, as Aretha Franklin said.
Completely.
Well, we're at the end of our time, but Estee, thank you so much for joining me. I appreciate how like insanely busy you probably are. So really, really grateful, and it's been lovely chatting with you.
Thank you. You've also helped me work out a few things in my head as well, so I feel better
Oh, brilliant.
Coming out of the conversation.
I hope you enjoyed that episode. All links will be in the show notes, and feel free to visit smartbeautycreative.com or visit us over on Instagram to find out more about what we do. And if you enjoyed listening, please don't forget to rate and review Smart Beauty on iTunes, as it helps people find us. See you next time.